our day will come, and we'll have everything. We'll share the joy falling in love can bring. No one.
I see Gwen Mesnikoff. This is Rich Buckland, and we are the Splendid Bohemians. Hey, Bill.
Indeed. Bill, indeed, we are.
We're going to talk today about an artist who I think has escaped the kind of recognition deserved, although at the age of 60 had a resurrection of career that is fascinating and maybe unparalleled in the history of music. And we're talking about Jimmy Scott, also known as Little Jimmy Scott, and Mr. James Victor Scott. And so here's the thing.
Well, this all started when you sent me a link to a YouTube video featuring Joe Pesci and Little Jimmy Scott, with Jimmy Scott towards the very end of his life, and his beautiful singing style, which we'll talk about. And this started for you a bit of an obsession, which then I caught fire with as well. And we thought, well, we need to do an episode on this particular song stylist.
Because he's so fascinating for a number of reasons. And I think we have to begin with the fact that he was quite challenged.
Right.
Jimmy Scott was dealing with what is known as Kalman syndrome.
Yeah, describe what that is.
Well, it's a rare genetic disorder that limited his height to 4 feet 11 inches until the age of 37, when he grew by 8 inches. The syndrome also prevented him from reaching classic puberty and left him with a high voice and unusual timbre.
Yes, almost akin to, well, they thought he was female when they first heard his records on the radio.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, in this show business culture, this early show business culture, it was Red Fox who suggested that he attempt to get on the what was considered the vaudeville circuit of the day and sing professionally. But there was certainly this distraction that he created within a masculine singer genre. And it was hard. There were people who felt uncomfortable with him. They just felt uncomfortable, whether they thought he was homosexual or whether the fact that at times he sounded like Billie Holiday or one of the great female voices of the day at times. He had this beautiful, beautiful tone.
Yeah, you started off with the information that basically characterizes his entire life and career. It's, when he sang the song, "Why Was I Born?" You know, he could relate to that so well. He was married 5 times. He was aggressively out to prove that he was heterosexual. But this sexual ambiguity characterized every aspect of his life, to the point where he would carry a knife, and if anyone, you know, assumed that he was a homosexual and came on to him, he would react with a knife.
No, he was ready to fight. Yeah, he was ready to fight at all times.
Yeah, he was very aggressive and angry.
Thank you.
pass. And my heart was beating fast. I began to lose control. Jealous guy.
It was Lionel Hampton, the great vibraphonist, most associated with Benny Goodman, for those familiar with that swing jazz era, that gave him the nickname Little Jimmy Scott.
Right.
And he always looked very young. His phrasing is one of the most remarkable things about his craft. And He has been aligned with Billie Holiday. He's been aligned with Ray Charles, Dinah Washington. You hear some Frankie Valli in there. Frankie Valli was very, very influenced.
Well, he does this thing that you can hear on the on that video, but also on all the songs. He sings behind the beat. This is something that Sinatra was famous for. So he could hold out a phrase to the very last second. It says here in an interview that was conducted with him in 2000 by Joseph Hooper. He says, I like the way he puts it. He had a phrasing so idiosyncratic as to become a private language. No one sings slower or farther behind the beat than Jimmy Scott. His long, melismatic flights freeze conventional time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are recordings. The early Savoy recordings demonstrate he's like an elegant prize fighter in his prime.
How much I love you. I believe that you would love me too. Everybody knows how the story goes. I have nothing to conceal. Everyone but you knows I love you too. I wish you felt the same way I feel.
You can hear and feel the gliding and the sensations and the motion. He's like a fighter in flight. You know he's fighting for his identity, and you know that he's flicking out these beautiful jabs, and he's throwing into the air things that you've never heard before, and if you were to see him, never had seen before.
But and as good as he was, as much of a singer as he was remained a secret to the general public. He quit the business for 20 years. We should talk about, because you mentioned Savoy Records, and the man who ran Savoy Records. What was his name?
This is the cat that I'm trying to recall at this time. I do not recall his name, but he was notorious for
Herman Lubinsky.
Herm Lubinsky. This guy was known as the worst record owner and manager in the business, particularly back
then. And that's saying something.
Yeah, and that's saying something back in that particular day. And he had him chained to a contract that would not allow him to work for any other records, for any other record labels. And it became very difficult. And one of the reasons that he performed with Charlie Parker and Ray Charles, but is not credited. He's given no credit on the recordings, particularly his recording with Charlie Parker, that demonstrated it was the kind of recording that gained a lot of attention at the time, but he was not credited on that recording.
Yeah, in 1962, when Scott was in his late 30s, he tried to break with Savoy. Ray Charles signed him to his own new Tangerine label and produced and played piano on Falling in Love is Wonderful, which is by Critical Court Scott's finest, but it stayed on the shelves only a matter of weeks before Binsky claimed an exclusive contract. So that was the first time that he scotched Scott's opportunities. Later, in the 70s, Joel Dorn produced an album called The Source, and the same thing happened again.
And it's a beautiful record. And for anyone who's got access to Apple Music or Amazon Prime, you take a look at the Jimmy Scott catalog, and The Source is certainly one of these beautiful, beautiful records that should have had chart success and should have been an enduring classic.
My darling, I've hungered for your kiss alone, lonely time.
Yeah, so after that, he went back to Cleveland, stopped singing for 13 years, worked as an aide in a nursing home and a shipping clerk at the Cleveland Sheraton.
He was a waiter. He worked at a hamburger joint, limo driver, I understand. Just a number of vocations in order to survive. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, his recordings are played on a popular New Jersey jazz radio station. And bingo,
yes.
He's invited to
WBGO.
And the man's career begins to take off.
I need your love. Godspeed, your love to me.
After six decades of life and going through all of these sufferings and these torments. Now you've got a discography here that's pretty amazing. When you consider
despite all the hardship, right?
It's incredible. You begin in 1955 on Savoy, then in 1960 he makes his last Savoy album, jumps to Tangerine, which his wife had something to do with. I believe his wife assisted him in getting that gig. So that's 1963. The Source is Atlantic. It is released in 1970 though.
Okay.
It is released in 1970. But then Savoy begins to work its magic, and they're releasing some stuff of his back in 76. So then you go on to Specialty, releasing him in 91, Sire in 92, Warner Brothers in 94 and 96. Decca.
It was in 1991, his buddy Doc Pomus died. And when Scott sang at the funeral, Seymour Stein, who we know, isn't he the one who had Sire Records?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, and he rediscovered Jimmy and brought him back from obscurity.
And the rest, as they say, is history, because what transpired at that particular point were engagements, a documentary film that PBS aired that chronicled his life, and a variety of other awards that he never believed he could ever achieve, given the history.
Crazy.
Just an insane story. Where he fits.
Well, what is the moral here?
Well,
never give up.
Well, I guess that there's a lottery in life, and I guess at some point, if you are good enough, you have to think that you're going to be able to get the attention that you deserved. But this was a different time. This was a whole different era. And I think the respect for those kind of recordings was more than would be regarded today. And I think that he was given the opportunity due to that respect and to an understanding of the traditions and his personal story, what he had to overcome in order to even attempt to achieve what he started out to achieve.
And then he became sort of a show business mascot. You know, he appears on Lou Reed's Magic and Loss album,
which
kind of blew my mind there. And then he appears in one of David Lynch's films,
mm-hmm.
right? You can see him, and he's singing. His strangeness, his ambiguity, his otherness became badges of glory.
Yeah, and I think these distinctions made him a favorite of so many people in the industry that every opportunity was taken to think of how he could be utilized and still projected in an artistic culture that still might care. And the fact that we are talking about him today certainly is recognition that that all worked out pretty well in the end. He died.
Well, this is once again where the streaming platforms of today enable you to discover, you know, long obscure gems.
And be able to do it immediately.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any research. You don't have to go to any record stores as we would do. You don't have to go to a library. Everything is at your fingertips. You can hear it. You can read it. And I think that doing homework used to be very important. But if technology has given us the ability to recognize a man like this instantly, then there should be some gratitude.
Absolutely, and thank you for sending me that clip. I got such a kick out of seeing the pleasure in Joe Pesci's face. He was like on cloud nine in that clip. It's like a kid.
And you can find that video on our Dig This page on Facebook, along with a variety of other clips. I just want to mention that. That Jimmy passed away in Las Vegas at the age of 88 in 2014, and a portion of East 101st Street in Cleveland, where he was from, was renamed Jimmy Scott Way in his honor. So this might have been he was a giant. And I know it sounds like one of those stupid showbiz phrases, the little tiny guy was a giant. But when you listen to these recordings, I think you'll understand why I'm suggesting that he was that big. And he truly was.
Yeah.
Bill, I thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
The opportunity for talking about little Jimmy Scott. And I am Rich Buckland, Bill Mesnick with you, and the Splendid Bohemians certainly have a lot more to discuss with you, and we shall be back with another episode. Love you, Mez.
Love you.